This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Game Theory Podcast. I'm Sam Vecini. Today, Jonathan Macri is going to join me because I woke up to a hell of a surprise today in Australia with OG Anunoby getting traded to the New York Knicks. This has been something that has been rumored as a potential outcome for a little while. Certainly, OG Anunoby signing with CAA over the summer after Omar Wilkes, his old agent, decided to go be a, I believe, vice president of something at Fanatics. Anunoby signing with CAA created a sense of tea leaves, at least moving forward for the Knicks as it pertains to acquiring him. I didn't expect it in December. I certainly did not expect a deal between a Toronto Raptors organization and a New York Knicks organization that is currently engaged in real litigation regarding like intellectual property of scouting between the two organizations. I didn't expect anything with this. So I love that we get this. The full deal is OG Anunoby, Precious Achiuwa, Malachi Flynn for Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, and a second round pick going the way of the Raptors. Jonathan Macri is here. Jonathan, what's going on, buddy?
Man, you want to talk about could have knocked me over with a feather. Like you, I am of the belief that for as much as people make a big deal out of December 15th, like trade season maybe begins January 15th, but even then you look back at the last few years and how many deals of consequence really come down before February. And I was talking to someone earlier today about when's the last Knicks trade specifically that shocked me to the extent that this one did, in part because of the timing and maybe a little bit the return, which we'll get to. I think you got to go back to at least Kristaps, where we went from like the two sides had a meeting and there was a trade requested to he's on his way to Dallas like a half hour later. Or even going back further than that, like the Marbury deal kind of came out of nowhere for me, although kind of learned better once we got wind of Isaiah's ways. But yeah, man, this was pretty wild for sure.
It's definitely pretty wild. I am excited to talk about this, especially because yesterday I recorded a podcast and my big overarching takeaway with the Knicks was I actually don't know what direction that they should go. That's how I started the 22-minute segment that we did on the Knicks. I was like, look, I'm going to be completely transparent. I'm not sure what they should do right now because my big overarching thing for them is that they shouldn't just be making a trade to make a trade. They should be only focused on deals that further their potential to get a number one guy. Mm-hmm. I know that there has been all this crazy conversation about Jalen Brunson because of Becky Hammon's statement that he can't be a number one guy on a championship team. I don't really care to get into that because I'm just good with taking Jalen Brunson on his merits. I think it's very clear, though, that they need somebody in that all NBA echelon at the very least in order to take the next step as an organization into real NBA title contendership. Now, I think this deal actually like accomplishes that in a really interesting way, despite the fact that I don't necessarily love the value. But I'll preface that and kind of give you the table here. What did you think of this deal when you first saw it? And then have your thoughts evolved after you've seen the deal?
I mean, first, let me just say you will not find anyone. And this is not an unbiased take. This is completely biased to someone who gets to root for this guy and has had more fun rooting for him than any player, honestly, since I was a kid rooting for Patrick Ewing. I love Jalen Brunson, but if he was to be the best player on a team that won a title, it would be bucking, you know, 50, whatever, however many years you want to go back, with the exception.
There's the one.
There's the one. Yeah. And that's the question, honestly, ironically, that I've gotten most from people who follow me and I interact with over the last few years, which is, can we be our version of the 04 Pistons? And my response is like, I don't really know what to answer that, because as currently constituted, no, I don't think this team can be. Is there some crazy world where maybe it happens? Whatever. We don't have to talk about that right now. Let's focus on the deal at hand. And for me, it is impossible to talk about the parties to this transaction without talking about the context that both of them are leaving and that both of them are entering into. So for Emmanuel, quickly, obviously we know, you know, obviously Tom Thibodeau, and I think most coaches would, because I don't want to single him out, has issues with the notion of going all in on a backcourt of two guards that are the size that they are, even for as gifted an off-ball defender as Emmanuel Quickley is. So that always kind of limited, I think, his potential here. What would be the ideal for a situation for an Emmanuel Quickley? Going alongside a jumbo initiator where he could be the nominal point guard, but at the same time, watch Scottie Barnes do what a handful of guys in the league could do with that kind of physical makeup and those sorts of abilities. So that checks that box. And then on the Knicks end, and this kind of veers into the territory we were just touching on, your tentpoles right now are Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle. I think Brunson's here for the long term. Can they eventually, you know, flip Randle and whatever for whomever? Again, maybe a conversation for a later day. But if you're trying to maximize what you have right now while still keeping your powder dry, I cannot think of a better player to fit in between those two, in part given the other constrictions of the New York roster, which is obviously very guard heavy, than OG Anunoby and what he brings on the defensive end. And I think the offensive part is maybe a little bit more interesting, but that's why for me, even if you, I think it's a fair argument to say that Quickley turns out to be the best player involved in this deal, I'm a big fan of it from that perspective for the Knicks.
Yeah. So I want to be clear whenever I say what I'm about to say here. I think that the best asset in the deal is probably Quickley, if I'm being completely honest. Like, I think Emmanuel Quickley is going to morph into an absolute dude in Toronto. It has like a very real chance to be an all-star. If you look at Emmanuel Quickley's numbers as a starter last season, he started 21 games for the Knicks. He averaged 22 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists in those games with a 60 plus true shooting percentage. Anytime the Knicks have asked him to expand his role in a real way, he's been able to do it. And I think he's going to be an absolute stud in Toronto. I get this from the Knicks perspective. I do. And the reason that I get this is that ultimately, from a future planning perspective, having OG Anunoby next to Jalen Brunson makes more sense, in my opinion, if you're trying to chase a star, than having Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett next to Jalen Brunson. I think it becomes a more attractive situation for potential free agents, for potential trade targets that come available. I think it makes more sense for the Knicks to have this roster construction moving forward. The other box that it ticks for the Knicks is that it really helps them right now, I think, on the defensive end of the court. Since the Mitchell Robinson injury, and I don't have the numbers, including last night's game against Orlando, but going night's game against Orlando, it was a 122.9, I believe, defensive rating since Mitchell Robinson went down on December 8th, and that's 27th in the NBA. Yeah. Getting OG Anunoby, and frankly, another big body who is athletic and who can defend in Precious Achiuwa, who, look, not the biggest part of this deal. We need to be very clear about that. But a guy that I think might come relatively cheaply this coming offseason because he was kind of out of the Raptors rotation and everything. While Isaiah Hartenstein, who in my opinion has been one of the two best backup bigs in the NBA along with Naz Reid this season, hits free agency. Having somebody that could be like cost controlled while you have restricted free agency rights over him behind Mitchell Robinson, who plays so hard and so physically that I don't think he's ever really going to stay 100% healthy and play 82 games in a season in his career. That's just being completely transparent. Having a real backup center option long term, I think, is a huge like win for them if Precious can prove that he can actually play that role. That remains to be seen if he can do that, but he's an interesting flyer to take, in my opinion, at least defensively, for a team that could use it. So I think that it actually ticks team need boxes for the Knicks right now, in addition to creating interesting sustainability outcomes long term.
Yeah, I don't know that the Mitch injury, and for anybody who may not be aware, he went out 10 games ago. By the time you're listening to this, it'll probably be 11 games ago because they're playing the Pacers in about 40 minutes. I don't know that it impacted whether they would have made this deal or not. I think they still would have made the deal. But the fact that I think they are far enough along, regardless of what you think of the wisdom of this path that Leon Rose took to build this team in this way, which I'm not sure was ever really up to him because James Dolan was never going to okay any kind of a remote tank job. But again, conversation for a different day. They were not going to punt this season. So we see what the results have been on defense without Mitch. I adore Isaiah Hartenstein. He's doing yeoman's work out there night after night. And you're not the only person I'm a bigger fan of than Jalen Brunson is Taj Gibson. Taj Gibson might be my favorite Knick since the 90s, but we could call a spade a spade. The ship has probably sailed. So I completely agree with your Achiuwa take. And you know, just in terms of what Onu Anunoby means and how he fits in, I don't want this to come off as me diminishing what Emmanuel Quickley means on the defensive end. The on-off numbers, I think sometimes on-off numbers, a little bit too much can go into them. I think the fact that Emmanuel Quickley has come off the bench so much over the last few years factors in ever so slightly to the on-off data, especially when one of the other people involved in this trade, RJ Barrett, just so happens to have some not so great on-off numbers that follow him around, and he's often with the starting five. Put that aside for a moment. I don't want to diminish Quickley's impact on defense, but there was already a logjam on this roster. I went and did the calculations before the season after they made the DiVincenzo signing official, and they were essentially, if you go by how many minutes these guys played last year, they were about 25 minutes over in terms of like taking what the minutes those guys play and what how many minutes are there to be had in an NBA game. So that's essentially a full rotation player, which they have lost in this trade, ostensibly, with, again, Quickley and Barrett going out and Anunoby coming in. They are somewhat equipped to make up for that between DiVincenzo and Grimes, who's, you know, an interesting name in all this. I'll be curious to see. He's not playing tonight, unfortunately, because he has a non-COVID illness. I don't even know if he's going to be long for this team, because there was a report out there from Ian Begley, who's great, that maybe the Knicks are not done yet, which maybe you want to get into that. But they have the bodies right now, I think. And when you add Anunoby to the mix, I think it really is going to help them a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the Knicks have bodies in the top nine. And then once you get beyond like the top 9, 10, 11 guys, it's like they have a lot of like open roster spots, frankly. It's probably a rude way to put it, but they have potential to like use both of their picks, like this draft that they have. Like, they have two picks between like 15 and 22, let's call it. Like, they actually could realistically roster two rookies if they can't make a move before then. Ultimately, what this comes down to is something similar to what you're saying. I think that they, A, were pretty well set for a consolidation move, and B, when making a consolidation move, what you have to consider is it is really valuable to have one player that can play on both ends of the court in a substantial way and open up potential situations for acquisitions, you know, across the board, right? And what this deal comes down to entirely for me, for the Knicks perspective, is this very simple question, and I'll be interested to hear how you answer it. Would you rather have OG Anunoby for $35 million a year, let's call it something in that ballpark, or would you rather have RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley for $55 to $60 million a year when you also still have to go out and find another star in addition to those guys. I think where I'm at, and I'll be interested to hear your take on this, I think I would just rather have Ananobi at the lower number, despite the fact that Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett are good players in some respect. They're really, really effective guys in, you know, some respects. Barrett limited in other respects. There are a lot of different ways we can talk about that. But like, I think I would rather have the one player when they still aren't done actually building this roster, which I think is the key to all of this.
And this kind of gets back to me, what I was kind of saying before, which is, were you going to find a team that placed as much value on acquiring Emmanuel Quickley as the Raptors seem to have placed on acquiring him here? And I don't know how you look at this transaction any other way, considering the fact that there is not a single first round pick involved in the deal. It's going to be probably the best second rounder of this year, but it's still, I mean, it's whatever. It's a 31st pick in the draft, has value, but it's not a first. It's, God knows it's not a distant unprotected first, which is what, you know, some of the thought process was originally in terms of what OG might fetch. So there's that part of it. And then interestingly enough for me, there's the RJ piece. And I should say outright, I agree with your stance. I'd rather have had, you know, Ananobi at his number than these two guys at their number. You know, RJ has been... I did.
Yeah, let's do this. The RJ Barrett in New York, like, moratorium. Or not moratorium, like, memoriam here. Like, yeah. What do we think of how this went?
So I have a list of questions about RJ Barrett that exists today in the soon-to-be the year of our Lord 2024. They are not altogether different from the list of questions I had about RJ Barrett in the year of our Lord 2019 when he
entered. Literally, like, there has been a worldwide pandemic, and these questions have not been answered.
I mean, it should be obvious, but like, can he shoot it consistently? You know, is there enough? Even given the volume of his driving, which is the one elite thing he does, the man knows how to get downhill, is there ever going to be enough of a rim finishing efficiency? And more importantly for me, and I think a lot of Knicks fans, from a decision-making and playmaking perspective on what he does on those drives, which, my goodness, and that's why I can't help but laugh, because to some extent during his eight really, really strong playoff games, very strong after the first two against Cleveland and before the last clunker against Miami, the eight games in between, really outstanding. And then the first seven games this year before he went down with migraines for a little bit more than a week, like there were moments of his processing and decision making where we were like, oh my goodness, is this it? Is it finally here? And I, you know, a lot of people bought it. I was even starting to buy it. And I can't for the life of me explain how in the 16 games since he's come back, or maybe it's 17 now, Sam, I promise you I watch these games with a pretty close eye, and I don't know where it has gone. And it leaves me just wondering, like, how, you know, it's the middle of year five. You know, he's about to cross 10,000 minutes as an NBA player. So, and there's some other things, like, and last thing I'll say quickly, like, defensively, he has had an up and down career. I have never myself gotten the sense that he is going to be the sort of impact defender you need at that spot. A guy who is like, I mean, I don't know how else to put this. The other team, like, if another team has a big time wing, that wing is going to look at RJ and be like, man, I got my work cut out for me tonight. I just don't feel that way. And reasonable minds may differ there. I have never gotten that sense.
I think he's the exact guy that you want defending the second best perimeter option on a team,
sure,
which is valuable and useful. You don't want him on the number one guy, unless it's like a super powerful physical guy that is going to try and like go through his chest, because RJ is so strong and physical himself that he can like, at least disrupt that guy from getting to the basket, at least, right? Yeah. Man, it's hard, because I totally agree with everything you just said. Like, the number one thing that has frustrated me, you know, and I've probably watched like 9 Knicks games this year. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, I've watched every minute of RJ Barrett this year. I'm not going to even remotely pretend to. But it stood out, like, abundantly to me on Christmas, right? Like you watch him.
Oh my God.
And that was a game where like in the first quarter, he played or first like maybe 15 minutes quarter. Of the game. He was awesome. Yeah. He was like incredible. Yeah. He was downhill, made a couple of threes. Like he was amazing. And then throughout the rest of that game, it was just like, well, okay, he's just like recklessly downhill, like head down, not figuring out where he needs to go. And I, it's whatever it is, say it's making kickouts, being able to figure out live dribble passing, being able to be more patient, keep guys on his hip and stop and draw defenders. He's good at keeping guys on his hip, but he doesn't actually draw the big toward him, I think, or draw any sort of help toward him in a dangerous way, which ends up resulting in these like these terrible like inside hand, left hand attempts at the rim and all this bullshit that he does. And that's the biggest thing that he needs to fix. If he fixed that, I think he's okay enough as a shooter to where it'd be okay. Like he's not going to burn the nets down or anything, but if you're able to be like a unbelievable rim pressure threat, like he is, and you can make your shots at the rim, you know what, he's probably, I don't know what the numbers are right now, but like I see he's making 47% of his 2-point shots right now. Like that's an insanely low number for somebody who's that strong and that.
Like, I want to say it's around 57 or 58 at the rim, but I'll confirm that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you could actually be like the aggressive, consistent rim pressure guy that is actually able to make shots consistently at the basket, it changes his game entirely if he can just make decisions off of those plays. So that's it for me. Like that's what they're going to figure out. And in Toronto, like it's an even more interesting situation right now because like this is not a good fit, I think, on the court for RJ Barrett as this roster is presently constructed. Now, I think they're going to make some other moves and we'll see what it looks like. But like Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam, Jakob Poeltl, all kind of in that area. Scottie's improved as a shooter. You know, Pascal has been really good over the course of the last little while. You can space in different ways other than shooting. Like you don't just need shooting. And I think Darko has done some interesting things this year, even though their half court offense has not been very good. Like I think there's just going to be a lot of bodies in the paint right now for RJ drives, and he's going to really have to shoot it from three, I think, to be effective there right now. It's really interesting because they need a secondary creator next to Quickley and Barnes. But like, I don't know what this looks like for him right now.
I mean, I think the vision is to place between Quickley and Barnes. I kind of feel like that player should be, if not an elite shooter, don't you feel like they need to be up there? I mean, they just invested what they invested in Poeltl. Obviously, teams shift course all the time. You know, Poeltl is what he is. He's a nice player.
And the other thing about Poeltl is I think he's an amazing fit with Quickley because the thing that Quickley does really, really well is he knows how to manipulate screeners at an exceptional level. Like you watch him play with Hartenstein, particularly like Hartenstein is like an unbelievable screener in terms of like using his frame and twisting and rescreening and doing all sorts of these little things to get his guard separation. Poeltl is also an expert at that. Like it's going to be a really, really fun combination watching those two, I think, interact together.
I mean, I don't know if how deep we need to get into this, but like Quickley, Trent makes some sense as a starting two now alongside Quickley. Obviously until Siakam is traded, Siakam is going to start. So unless they could start RJ at the two. I don't know how I would feel about that. Not that it matters.
I would bet you they start RJ at the two to begin this thing.
Yeah.
And then like Gary Trent's also expiring at the end of the year, you know, Pascal, we'll see what that looks like on the trade market, etc. We'll see how this all goes, right? Like their roster is not complete, much like the Knicks roster is not complete, I think, at this point. But I think they'll probably start RJ to start this
I think whole thing. The long and the short of it is, I think it's a great bet, right? If he's ever going to succeed, he loved being in New York, but he's obviously from Canada. And if you would think that if he's ever going to succeed somewhere, maybe going home and where I would say without the pressure of New York, but there's a, I mean, is the pressure of an entire country on you any easier? We'll see what the comfort level does there.
You know what the weird thing is about him, though? I think the pressure doesn't bother him. Like,
yeah, it's fair.
He's always been great in big moments. Like, he plays well in the playoffs, bizarrely. Like, he plays better in the playoffs than he does in the regular season. Going back to, like, Canada stuff, like, he plays better for Team Canada. Like, I don't know if it's the pressure that gets to him. I think it's, like,
I don't know
what it is. Like, I haven't been around him, so, like, I don't know.
I haven't either. I mean, he's super professional, and he never lets on if he's struggling, why he's struggling. Yeah. What I'll say is I had come around kind of recently to a position of, okay, if you have a guy that has his skill set and the shooting never does stabilize, isn't he maybe an ideal six man for the right team in the right spot? And I wonder, maybe that's the long term. Then again, I know he doesn't see himself that way. And who knows, maybe he goes there and he thrives and the shooting stabilizes and he makes my last comment look utterly ridiculous. Nothing would surprise me, honestly.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's a professional. Like, he really goes at it. Like, that's always been the thing about him. Like, he is a dude that is always, always, always going to bring his best, like, every night, and he's going to work at it and he cares. Just for whatever reason, like, the thinking part of it hasn't quite come yet on the court. A place I want to go to now is just like Emmanuel Quickley in general.
Sure.
And when I watch Emmanuel Quickley, I see a dude that I think is like unbelievable in ball screens, an incredible ball screen scorer. What do you think of the passing? Because that's ultimately where I think he needs to take the next step. He is 26 assists in 30 games this season on three pointers. When he passes, it's often jump stop, you know, survey, kick out, or it's to cutters, to rollers, pocket passes, things like that. And that's where the next step for him is. Like, he needs to be able to make those live dribble passes and make those plays, I think, for his teammates.
So this is not all on him, because it's him and Art. For anybody who doesn't know, the Knicks, the way they run their rotations are one of Brunson or Randall, usually Randall, will stay in for the entire first quarter, but those guys will play the majority of the first quarter. RJ will go out early. Quickley comes in the middle of the first quarter. And then RJ and Quickley combine to run New York's backup units without either one of Brunson or Randall for 4 or 5 minutes at a time. Those lineups this year, and this is what I was saying before, this is not all on Quickley, the ball has got a bit sticky at times. And looking at Quickley's assist number, he was 17.7 assist percentage last year with basically the same sort of type of usage this year. He's down to 15.1. I am not going to begrudge him that, as he knows he is playing for a contract. He's still playing for a contract, as he was last year, and he still does not have that contract. So I will say this. I do not think his passing has progressed from last season. And I think last season, despite the fact that his assist percentage actually went down from year two to year three, I think there were some real signs of progress last year in meaningful ways. Yeah. But at the same time, I want to try to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, he has become deadly from the mid-range. Like, early on when he first came into the league, like, the floater was like this cute thing, but even then the numbers on it were like, it's, you know, it's efficient enough to justify taking it, but I also wasn't like totally sold on that. Like, this year he is 48% from mid-range. He's 40% on long twos. He was 34% on long twos last year. He's all via cleaning the glass, by the way. So, like, I kind of get that he's calling his own number a little bit more, because the dude could score. The one thing I will say is that against the best teams, and unlike RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley did not have a good playoffs last year. He missed the end of the Miami series with an injury, but even before that, he struggled. And I think against teams with a little bit more length, and against teams that like key in on him and know how valuable and how important he is, and when he gets going, the Knicks get going. He has struggled a little bit. Now, He's a fourth-year player. He's still young. He's gotten better every step of the way. There's no reason to think he cannot continue improving, and that includes the passing as well. So, I mean, I'm with you on the upside. I think he has all-star upside. And yet, as I say that, having watched him for 3.5 years, like, I'm comfortable with this move for all the reasons we talked about. Like, I do not have – let me put it this way. I don't have the fear that we're going to be looking – or I'm going to be looking up in a year or so and seeing a Jalen Brunson-esque situation with, like, what Brunson is doing with the Knicks. I don't think we're quite at that level with Quickly.
I think it could look different than Jalen. Like, Jalen, I don't think Quickly is going to be like a 28-point-per-game scorer like what Jalen has been recently, right? But I think, like, Quickly could be like a 24-point-per-game scorer with like five assists per game that isn't a real problem defensively. Like, Jalen, we have to figure out whatever you can do defensively to, like, you know, make that work. Emmanuel, you don't really figure out that side of the court as much because he's so long and so good at dealing with guys up the lineup a little bit better. And, you know, he's fine. He's pretty good at the point of attack. I think he deals a little bit better with guys up the lineup, but he's a good defender at the end of the day. So I think it will look different than Jalen, but I do think, like, this could be like an all-star caliber point guard. And even still, I think this is fine for the Knicks. Yeah. Like, even still, I think that highly, like, put it this way. If I was making a headline about this trade, I would say this is the Emmanuel Quickly trade. Like, to me personally, like, I actually think he's the guy in this deal, but I still think this is fine for the Knicks because of what their roster construction is right now. Like, I think this is a win. Like, basically what I'm leading toward is this is a win-win to me. Like, this kind of makes sense across the board to me as somebody that is trying to understand where these teams are going.
It depends, as you open the show with what the Knicks do from here. The reason why I am really pretty high on their process here, and we'll see the eventual outcome turns out to be, is that, like what I said before, I think they needed this type of player. And how often do these players become available? And if another one of this ilk did become available, what are the odds that that team would want and need Emmanuel Quickly as much as it seems like the Raptors need and want him? Yeah. So I,
but and again, the time not, is running now too, as well.
Well,
before Quickly gets expensive.
Well, not only that, but like the Knicks are not even in the first apron right now. Like, that train was getting close to the station. Like, this summer there was going to be some, and look, they still have to pay OG obviously. And there's some other decisions that they have to make, which will impact, like, Isaiah Hartenstein, you just mentioned before, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. I think they'd very much like to have him back. Grimes, if he doesn't go out on another deal, they could extend him this summer. So there's some different moving pieces, but I think this puts them at more of a position of strength to approach whatever comes next. And, like, I mean, again, this is the fan in me coming out. I'm excited to see what these three guys could do together. Anunoby with Brunson and Randall. I don't pretend like this is some sort of, like, great fit. I don't know. That's part of the challenge, right? Like, what is the perfect fit between these two particular players who have more value with the ball in their hands than not in their hands, you know? OG likes to have the ball in his hands, whether he should or shouldn't. That's part of the aspect of this trade that we have to consider. But I don't know. I'm excited to see what it looks like and obviously what they end up doing from here.
Yeah, so I do want to finish kind of on two things. Let's start with where the Knicks go from here. Because again, as we opened with, this trade is about the next move to me almost as much as it's about this move for Anunoby.
Sure.
I personally do not think that guy is out on the market right now. Like, if I'm looking around, like, I don't think the DeJounte Murray thing is a good idea. I don't think that. Yeah, Pascal Siakam makes a whole lot of sense unless it's just like flipping him for Randall in some way. Like, I don't know who the guy is on the market right now that makes this work for the Knicks as a number one. I think that doing this keeps you flexible long term, in order to have the salary flexibility, continue to have the pick capital that you need to make a superstar deal. Is there a name out there that you're looking at where you're like, okay, I hope this guy comes available? Like, the obvious name is Joel Embiid, but like, let's assume that is not going to come available here momentarily.
This is the tough part, because there is none. I mean, people will bring up Donovan Mitchell's name. The notion of bringing in another guy who's a small guard, who's a defensive liability. Now, I think Mitchell, obviously, is an offensive individual creator, is, I mean, freaking brilliant. But is that, again, with his concerns that he brings in terms of, like, how much is his equity when he does not have the ball? Like, how is he amplifying Brunson and Randall? How are Brunson and Randall amplifying him, or vice versa? You know, anything in that discussion. So I don't know that that is, like, the obvious answer, even if it may be the most – it may be one that comes to fruition down the line. I mean, the guy that – it's never going to happen, but the guy that I'd be sure interested to see reunite with his Villanova teammates is playing across the river in Mikal Bridges in Brooklyn. Now, it's not a perfect positional fit, but – and he's not a superstar. But again, going back to my little dream world of the recreating the 04 Pistons, I'd be curious to see what that would look like. But again, that's not going to happen, because those teams never trade.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Like, you pair Mikal Bridges and OG and Anobi on the wing defensively. That's just, like, absolutely fucking terrifying to me.
Yeah.
The names I'm kind of wondering about are, if you look forward toward this summer, could you pry one of Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, both of whom are free agents? Because those are the two guys to me that, like, elevate this thing, especially, I mean, God, if you got fucking Kawhi Leonard, it's Kawhi Leonard, right? Like, he's still one of the five best players in the league if I had to win a playoff game tomorrow. But
that's,
like, those are the guys that, like, make this make sense in some way to me. And you'd have to, like, sign and trade and do, like, all sorts of weird stuff, obviously, because the Clippers have a lot of flexibility after this year. But, like, those are the names where, like, you know, Joel Embiid, I think, is going to be tough, because Tyrese Maxey is blown up and, you know, they're sitting here and they're in quite a strong position, right? It's hard to find the team that's going to, like, explode. Like, I don't know if you want to go down the Zion Williamson road right now. Like,
that's the only other, it's the only other name that we haven't talked about.
I've
gone back and forth on Zion, so I'll say something now that I'm sure somebody watching or listening can go back and find something contrary that I've said recently, because I don't I don't know how you're supposed to evaluate him as a player, as an asset, as a whatever. Yeah. He is, as a Zion. Putting that aside, the nice thing about the idea of a Clippers trade is, you looking at what their priorities might be, because it's still in an LA market. And so if you did get all of New York's picks, if you're the Clippers, you have, I think, some confidence that some player at some point in time is going to demand to be traded to your team, because you're LA and those picks are going to have real value. So there's an outline of a trade there. I mean, the money is a little bit tougher, because, like, other than picking up Fournier's option, like, basically you're talking about including Randall, which, like, hey, maybe that makes sense. And, like, Randall already played in LA. Maybe he wants to go back to LA. Like, there's, and especially given what they've had to deal with over the last several years of guys who are perhaps not the most consistent in terms of showing up and playing every night. If there's one thing that Julius Randall does, is show up and play every night. So would they value that? In terms of, like, Randall's fit with, like, Harden and whichever one of those two remained, and that gets into more complex issues. But,
well, I think that what happens there is either both of them stay or neither of them stay.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. That's it. Like, I didn't consider that.
That's not, like, to be clear, that's not informed on, like, any level, you know, of sourcing. That's just, like, strategically, if I'm them, like, I'm either keeping both of them or I'm blowing it up. Right.
Or you just punt it. Okay.
Right, and you punt it. So, I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with ideas here. Like, I'm a solutions man. That's the goal.
but look, this is, you know, there's a joke around Knicks fans, like, you know, Leon Rose is like the Don, right? Operates in the shadows and silence. This is the business that he's chosen from day one. when he hired Tom Thibodeau, almost day one, when he hired Tom Thibodeau, when, as best as I could tell, there was never any thought given to trading Julius Randle when he was just starting out on that first All-NBA season. The end point was, we're eventually going to trade for someone that's going to put us over the top. And like, yeah, I've been critical of him and his team at times over the years, but he's brought them this far. And like, man, I don't have to tell you where they were in the depths of darkness. So like, beggars can't be choosers. I'm on board for the ride, foolishly or otherwise. I'm pretty cool with where we're at right now. And but you know what? Now you kind of still have to hope, right, that something transpires that is maybe not in your control.
Yeah. I think Leon Rose has done a great job. Like, I'll just flat out like say it full stop. I think he's done a great job. He's made the Knicks, like, the goal was to make the Knicks a destination organization in some respect again. He's done that. Like, anytime you hear something, it's, you know, OG Anunoby wants to go to the Knicks. You know, there are rumors about Donovan Mitchell wanting to go to New York, right? And I think he's done a good job of building organizational trust again, building organizational competency again, and setting them up to be able to go find that next guy. The last thing I want to finish on is, hey, Malachi Flynn, kind of interesting. Just want to be clear about that. Like, sure. Interesting point guard who, you know, has been in Toronto's rotation here for a little bit of time now. If you go from November 11th through December 20th, played 18 minutes a night, 5.7 points per game, shot, you know, not all that great from the field, but he plays hard defensively, makes good decisions. You know, they could use a backup point guard at this point. I'd imagine it's going to be like an all-out war between him and Deuce McBride and Deuce. Now.
Yep.
We'll see what happens there, but there's going to be a real opportunity there for him. Do you have any closing thoughts here on this deal that we haven't gotten to?
Not really. I mean, I remember after one Raptors game in particular during Flynn's and Quickley's rookie seasons, because they both were in the same draft class, and the Knicks, I think, could have drafted Flynn, but they took Quickley instead. I think it was a game that maybe Quickley didn't play well, and Flynn was like lighting it up from deep. And that night on the post game that I did, fans were like, man, we could have had Malachi Flynn instead of Emmanuel Quickley. How stupid are the Knicks? I'm curious to see him. I like Deuce. There are people in the fan base that love Deuce. And like, look, when he does what he does on, like, you can't teach what that dude does on the defensive end. His, like, you look at his deflections for 36 minutes. And he's a guy that, like, I mean, you're not having him guarding, like, you know, like threes and fours, like on the other team, but you, as opposed to what I was saying about RJ Barrett before, you feel Deuce when he is guarding you. And I think, you know, it's the same question for a lot of guys who have those sorts of skill sets. Can he ever shoot it with some consistency? And I think the one thing that I will give a bone to for the people that are really big supporters of his, he's never really gotten that long a leash. Like, he's had stints in the rotation last year. He had like a fairly extended stint in the rotation, and like the numbers were fine as a team. He did not shoot it great individually. So, I mean, he needs to shoot it. If he shoots it, that's great. And it's his job. Otherwise, I could see Tibbs going with Flynn.
Yeah, my concern with this is just that they actually now kind of need a second unit guy to like run the offense, as opposed to bringing what Deuce does particularly, which is like hound dudes defensively and just make life miserable. So I think it's going to be interesting to track. Because I was a big Deuce fan.
I remember. One more thing on that, that's a little interesting quirk to all of this. Another thing fans have been clamoring for since they got him at the beginning of last year is using Isaiah Hartenstein more in the role that he was in LA as more of a, you know, top of the post facilitator. We've seen a little bit more of that this year. Not anywhere, to be clear, close to the extent that it was in LA, but it's an interesting conundrum because we figure Isaiah Hartenstein is still going to start, obviously, with Mitchell Robinson out. So how is there going to be a finagling of the minutes to make to try to get Hartenstein more with the backup unit to give him more of that responsibility? I don't know. It's just a little wrinkle that I'm one of the million things that I thought about today as I'm processing this trade.
Jonathan, tell the people where they can find your work. Tell the people what's going on. Everything along those lines.
Sure. First of all, again, thanks so much for having me on. It's pretty surreal when you get to go on a pod of someone that you listen to religiously before you ever started doing podcasts or writing about basketball or anything of that. So you follow me on Twitter, although I don't really tweet that much anymore because I've kind of sort of opted out of Twitter. But I'm at JC Macri NBA on there. And then just search up Knicks Film School. That's the big one. If you want YouTube post games, if you want instant trade analysis, if you want a weekly analysis of the Knicks, Knicks Film School on YouTube. And then my personal Substack is just, again, Knicks Film School Substack. Put that in Google. You'll be taken right to my page. And I do that 5 days a week and love writing it. And the podcast, yeah, Knicks Film School podcast. That's the other one. So podcast, YouTube, newsletter, all the things.
To be clear, so this was like a 40-minute deep dive, and I think we touched on everything. John, Jeremy, all those guys over at Knicks Film School, they went for 3.5 hours today, earlier.
That whole time. I stayed on for the first hour and change. Yeah, it was a mix. But they were on for a while. Yeah. We put in the time.
If you want to deep dive into everything Knicks, go follow Knicks Film School. They do a great job. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We'll be back, like I said, like Tuesday, Monday, something like that. Probably Tuesday at this point, given that New Year's Day is coming. It's New Year's Eve here in Australia. So I will hopefully be logging off after I write my thing, scouting everything with this deal. Keep tuned in here. We'll be back. Until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.